Hello everyone and welcome for a new episode of Software Crafts podcast. Today with us we have Paul Drey. Paul is a believer in organization missions rather than IT and business alignment. He's a consultant specialized in helping organizations to change their operating model to achieve better flow, fostering a healthy working environment. He started his career as a developer but soon find the people and processes challenge more interesting. He's fond of music and technology, and he doesn't miss his workouts. Hi, Paul, and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So for today, for Software Crafts podcast, we have this heuristic from Simon Worley that is, strategy is iterative, not linear. What is your opinion about this?
So I wholeheartedly agree with this, right? I was driving in my car today, and I was listening to Teske Brothers, and I was thinking about this heuristic. And if you look at music, you know, I don't know musicians, and not that I'm a musician, that wake up, write the entire song from start, and then go to recording studio, right? They might have melodies in their head. They might have chords in their head or riffs or these kind of things. But they develop the song as they write it or record it. They try out things. And I feel that with strategy, it should be mostly the same. You know, you have an idea on where you want to go. You have an in direction where you want to go. And you use that to develop and test your ideas and to look and learn what is working and what not. You know, you go out and have experiments. And based on that, you see if your direction is right or you find the right implementation of that direction. And I see a lot of overlap with music there.
That's cool. Thanks for bringing your experience in a different field. Helps a lot. And you talk about the strategy and doing experiments. How do you do experiments to help with strategy?
So, you know, I've seen multiple things work, right? You know, there's this whole thing about MVPs or the minimum lovable product. But in the end, all those things boil down to, you know, I have an idea and I'm going to test it, whether it's on a production website or I go to a group of users or I do some testing on the street. Just get your early response and see what works. And there are mainly there are so many mechanisms for it. And the same goes maybe for, because now we're talking a lot about functionalities or these kind of things, but the same might be for how you implement things, right? Proof of concepting is also for me an experimentation of your strategy. Now, let's say you want to go microservices, okay? Build a proof of concept, load test it as a maniac, mimic production traffic or whatever, right? See it as an experiment and see where it works for you. See if it makes sense with the transactions that you have in your organizational model or whatever. These kind of things. There's so many experiments that you can think of before, you know, investing so much money and effort into something that you are designed in your head and on paper without any knowledge. And sadly, that's what we see happening a lot, right? We are both active as consultants. You know, we're often brought into, you know, someone designed it in a PowerPoint, now go fetch and implement. But reality is different, right? Reality is more harsh than that. You need to learn along the way and evolve your plans. And that evolving is hard often. Something with sunk cost fallacy there, right? I've put in a lot of money and a lot of effort in this, so why should I let this go?
Cool. Thanks for bringing these concepts and strategies to help in strategy itself. And you also focus yourself into help teams. So how a team, an engineering team or a team that develops and maintains software can do experiments to help with strategy?
Yeah, so it depends on different things, right? So like I said, for business ideas, a team can ensure that there is that they can deliver fast, for example, right? Make sure that you can put in a functionality on the website or application as soon as possible so that you can start to collect data and ensure that your environment captures that data. If it's third party or your own, doesn't matter. But make sure you can test out ideas that business has or that you have for yourself and see if it works. That could be. And like I said, with implementation, just go out for proof of concepting. You know, if you think an architecture or technology will work, concept it, think about it. But also think about the impact, right? It's not just, hey, the technology works. No. If we would go for this, what is the effect on the business, right? So maybe, I don't know, moving from Java to Go as a language, it's not just technically interesting, but it makes your website way more performant or applicative or responsive. And as a result, that impacts the business by lower page times, so higher conversion, these kind of things. So also think about not just what's the technical impact, but what does it do for my business? Because in the end, the business pays for it. We need to realize that. So you can look when doing proof of concept also beyond those metrics in terms of business impact or customer impact.
Cool. Very nice that you share with us that these few points that teams can look for. And also in my career, I observe sometimes that POCs end up in production and being the thing. What are your heuristics to avoid that happen?
Well, it's still something that I personally struggle with as well, right? Because sometimes, you know, it's just so successful and, you know, time and enthusiasm catches up with you. You're just keeping evolving the proof of concept. I think in the end, it requires discipline. It requires discipline as a team to either say, well, okay, this was a proof of concept. We need to think about what we need to do to make this more production worthy or get rid of the flaws that a proof of concept might have. And the same goes for managers or leadership. They need to realize that there's a point in time that they have to play catch up or do a rewrite or whatever. And that's hard. Because if it's successful, why should you not continue that success instead of stopping the evolution of it and choosing differently? And also here, it's not enough to say, it's just a proof of concept. We need to make it more production proof or production ready. Here it's also to identify what is then lacking and what's the impact of that on your technology and your business. I can easily make a case, well, we've done nothing with backups. We need to work on backup capabilities because otherwise things happen and it might happen because it's on-premise and we don't have those things. This is the risk as a business. And that's something that a business is not doesn't mind to think about and to talk about. They know that they have to mitigate risks. You know, product owners or leaders are used to thinking those terms, right? So changing the conversation also in business terms really helps there to see what the next evolution is. And moving away from proof of concept doesn't mean we need to rewrite all the stuff or those kind of things, right? It's often evolution, but you need to find and identify the fields you have to evolve in.
Cool. And you talk about interesting concept there, that is the language, and in this specific case, talking about risks. Would you say that as software engineers, we lack this feel for using these words or think about safety as a primary concern in our job?
Well, so if you think in terms of language, what we often see is that for technical teams, for teams, it's often sometimes hard to grasp the language or the concerns of the business, the product owner, right? And that's where we got into discussions and then, you know, things like they don't care about technical debt and these kind of things come popping up. Well, in reality, I see it mainly as a mismatch between each other's understanding. And I'm not saying it's the fault of the technical teams, because the same might go for the business, right? Everyone needs to put an effort here. But if you talk about the same language, it often helps. So I remember that in a former company that I worked, I've introduced a single language construct to talk about technical debt, because now it was not just, oh, we need to modernize our application or we need to put effort in it was, no, we increased the reliability of our application or we increased the performance. And if we gain in performance by 100 milliseconds, we add a 0.5% of conversion and you know what the money of a 0.5% conversion on our website is. And by doing that, you also level the playing field of the roadmap, right? So it's not just a technical thing. No, it's really business impact that has its technical, it has the technical core of it. It impacts the business, and everything we do technically impacts the business as well. We just need to be a bit smarter about making that work visible or making that impact visible. And using the same language really helps there. And like I said, right, it's not just the tech people, it's also the business people. You know, they need to be willing to learn and understand. And that takes time, takes a lot of effort to come to the same level from both parties.
Cool. So let's imagine that, well, I own a company and I see the gap between these two groups growing. How should I start as a leader to close or help people to close this gap?
So I think what I've seen working is first you need to bring them together, right? So in your organizational design, it's helpful if they're closer together. You still may have your tech team and you may still have a business team, but at least make sure that they have the same goals, that they have the same events, you know, that they feel also in how you bound them in your wordings, that they feel that they are the same, that they are one part. And think about the goals that they have, right? The goals should be common. It's not just that the tech team wants to build the best system and that the business team wants to have the most happy customers. No, they all need to feel that they want to have the most happy customers while delivering the best system. Because only then you can bring the balance to everyone to think about. And if you organize it as such and you get people rooted for the same cause, that will really help to make them work as a team. And then still, you know, you will have arguments and there will be fights and things that you need to solve. But as a starter, that really helps. What is our common mission? And really important here is that it's not just the business, right? You need to put the IT ambition in it as well, right? So happy customer via the most reliable system, things like that, right? But if you neglect the IT part in your mission, in your goals, it won't fly. It will be really hard to get them really on the same page, because then you get into the same problems that you have already right now.
Cool. To start bringing these together also very close to your personal mission. And you talk about, during this answer to the last question, about we close the gap, but we still have fights and discussions between one another. So as a manager, what types of skills should I have to manage this?
So there will always be one point in time that as a manager, you need to make a decision. But you want to postpone that as late as possible. So not at the first fight, just say, well, this is what I want and go for it. No, it's really the excess. I think you should have a lot of empathy and you should be a good facilitator in bringing those people together and let them talk with each other, right? So yeah, you might be in between or above, no matter how you look at it. But you want those people in that the same room and start to talk, but you need to guide that conversation. And that means that, well, first, your own ego doesn't count. You need to be empathetic. And you need to be really well-versed in listening, in truly listening, to understand what people are saying and figure out what the differences are, but especially where people actually agree, but they're simply in different language bubbles. Because often that's what I see in my work as consultants. People have the same intents, the same desires, but they're just, you know, the one say that the car is red and the other say that it's burgundy, for example. They mean the same, right? And just showing that and bringing those people together, that makes sense. And in the end, everyone has his own perspective on things, but what brings it together, that's what counts. And I think managers could do way more to facilitate that process. And it doesn't withdraw the responsibility from them, right? So if it's unsolvable or It's just, well, you know, I have my opinion, you have your opinion. What does the company want? Then managers should step in and show what the way is. Again, for me, it feels as something that should be the last resort, not the first.
Cool. And imagine that we have more managers with this mindset, and we can talk about that later. Do you envision that new social structures or organizational structures are emerging inside of companies, or are we still in a old world, very directive?
No, so I think, you know, if I look at my dream company, we're not talking about tech as a department anymore, and we're not talking about business as a department anymore, right? You're way more organized in your via your value stream, for example. I don't know, let's say if you're an e-commerce company, you have a head of shipping and you have a head of ordering. And as a head, you're responsible for both the operations, the development, and the technical things. And if you look at the role of managers, I think they will evolve more towards a coaching role. I think also you see it happen already, right? You see in a lot of the patterns emerging is that leaderships are not leaders because they were the best in their field. They are leaders because they were the best in their social skills. And I think you will see that way more and more and more. And the collective, if you're really good to get the collective in showing what the way is and using that knowledge to build your vision and your mission, still doesn't take away the responsibility of making choices at some time. I think you get into a way different company and way different organization that works differently with a different engagement from the people that work there. You need to organize it in a different way. You need to set the goals and the missions in a different way to get people bonded and to get them excited about what that mission is.
Cool. And are you seeing signals that companies are moving towards this new role of managers or having these new internal structures?
I know a few companies that are currently outliers, right? I know a company that where the CEO is quite strict that he never wants a CTO in his board. I think that's a good sign because technology is important, but it's not as it's the purpose of the technology that's important. So right, so put all your value streams in the board. I totally agree with that. But that's an outlier, and I think in the new companies you see this pattern emerging more and more. But companies that come that are existing for a long time that have to tradition the transform and evolve, we're a long way there. And sometimes maybe also hindered by regulations or law or whatever rules apply there. Yeah, we need to start breaking that down. But therefore, we first need to have successful companies that do it like that.
Cool. And if I'm a CTO and I really want to help my company, I might see my position disappear. Will you say that even these heads of value streams should have a technical background or some skill on that?
I think they definitely should have a skill on that. And maybe not in terms of, hey, I needed to be a programmer or whatever, right? But there are common characteristics and traits in software/application development where managers should be aware of. I think managers could be way more aware of the life cycle of software, right? I think often we think that, well, if you don't do any software development, it will have the same quality and the same level of performance for years. But that's not true. Your environment is evolving, your context is evolving. So if you don't do nothing, it degrades instantly, right? And these kind of mindsets, I think, is lacking at managers that doesn't come from an IT world. But it's also conceptually, right? So I think Harvard has the CS50 course, Computer Science 50 course. It's one of the most popular courses, not because that many students become computer scientists, but because of they learn there the logic and the reasoning. And I think that are skills that are good for anyone to capture. I think it's among one of the new skills that we need way more and more in our society and in new organizations. And I think in terms of, well, do I need to be scared of my job as a CTO? Maybe if you're really hierarchically oriented, maybe you should. But in terms of importance, you only become more important. But it's not because you make all the decisions, but you could help people make better decisions. And let's not also forget, there's still some tech for tech in a company in any given case, right? We need platforms, we need stuff to deploy applications from, and some general things around it. So you might still have a head of internal tech, just don't put them in your board. And as a CTO, you can be the best business coach, tech coach, however you like to call it, for the people that are in your board or below that. Your impact is way bigger because now they're not envy you because of your budget. They are not mad at you because deadlines or whatever, right? You have a really free role to coach people. I will be happy with that.
Cool. It's indeed a nice organizational design, and a nice advice as well. And you touch the new skills, right? We talk about social skills. We talk about knowing a little bit of computer science world. There are other skills that you envision that a new type of managers, new type of leaders should acquire?
Well, I think managers become a facilitator more and more. Well, we're also in this crazy world where everyone is more remote. So I think it's important let me put it differently, right? So I know from when I started to become a manager is that a lot of it is focused on your one-on-one relationship with people, right? A lot of the content. And I think that's good for personal development of people, right? And making sure people, right, that you help build the psychological safety. But you also see that psychological safety is a lot of a group effort, right? So as a manager, you need to be able to facilitate those group discussions and make sure you get everything from below the surface also up to the surface. And there's not much done in that area, right? So if I become a new manager at the average company, I get a lot of training and one-on-one conversations, right? How do you run it and how do you ensure people are personally developed? But okay, how do you make sure people develop in that group, and how do you make the group stronger? I think that's an area that requires way more attention. And also recognitions in the term, hey, there is something here that I need to do or change as a manager.
Well, definitely, because I also see some of those patterns, right? We see lots of books focus on individuals, not on teams. So it's a good wish to get better at that. A nice tip also for the companies out there. Listen to this. And if I'm a developer, a young professional, and I have the same attraction as you had in the past towards people and process and organizational design, where should I invest my career?
Good question. It also sounds like I had a master plan or something, but a lot of these things were, it came on my way because I collected a bunch of interesting people around me that shared a lot of knowledge. I still am on Twitter a lot, not for all the crazy opinions of people, but it's a great place for learning new ideas and learning about that. I think in terms of empathy, and I see Lara Hogan as one of a really influential person there. I think she has great ideas on how to cope with teams and individuals and personal growth. Kind of things. And one of my biggest tips that I could give to anyone is take time to reflect. So yeah, you might, I've learned for myself that sometimes I'm keen to pick up a new book or whatever, and then I don't do it, but I go out for a walk for a half hour just to think about things, to take time to reflect. And sometimes that's more valuable than reading someone else's insights or opinions. They're still important, right? But how often do we as people reflect on our own behaviors, own actions? But also, how does the world around me look like, right? So when I left my former employer, I think I did the most valuable insights because I left and I took the time to reflect on what I've done there and what didn't succeed for me. And that to today are still very valuable lessons instead of what I've learned in a book of Dan Pink or whoever, right? So I would say do regular reflection. And you don't have to meditate. You don't have to take a walk in the park or whatever. Whatever works for you. But take a half hour to think, what, you know, how am I doing? What have I learned? What do I see around me? I think that's incredibly valuable.
Cool. Cool to share something that personal. So on that note, do you register your thoughts or your thought process for the future or just important stuff?
I should. I try to get better at it, but I suck every time. I'm trying to work out to do better noting, but I'm not good at it. So maybe I should write down more and then I don't tend to forget as much. If you can work out a journaling system or a noting system, that would be great. I've every time I tried journaling, but I'm not that good at it. After a week or so, it stops. I don't know why.
Okay, cool. And it's been very interesting, but we are going towards the end of the interview. So I have a final question, kind of touch it. What is your wish for IT for the next 5 years, let's say?
Yeah, I think my biggest wish is that IT is not a thing on its own anymore. I think IT is just an integrated part like shipping or warehousing or these kind of things, right? It's a way to make your business succeed. And in the end, the goal is to make sure that that business succeeds. And, you know, IT becomes a bigger part of that in any given case. But we shouldn't stop calling IT just IT as its own island, as its own bubble. That would be my biggest wish. No more CTOs, no more CIOs, just head of or chief shipping or chief ordering or whatever, right? And blend technology in that, blend data in that, blend operations in that, right? If it's customer service or shipping or warehousing employers, you know, in the end, they're all part of that same goal, making customers happy, earning money or whatever your goal is, right? But don't treat them differently. They might operate differently simply because of the nature of the work or culturally, but you need them to make a success, right? So group them as one unit.
Cool. Thanks for your wish. Hope that we can achieve that in the next 5 years. We will observe that.
Who knows?
Exactly. So to close off this interview, what are the resources that you recommend to the audience? Books, podcasts, blogs, YouTube videos, whatever.
Yeah, so like I said, I think reflection is important. And in terms of books, there's so many great books. Like a Team Topologies that probably is mentioned before. I think that's a great way to think about organizational design and also in interactions. And one of the things that I still like is Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits. And especially the chapter about, the circle of influence, because a lot of people are always talking about others, right? And how others are hurting them to make it a success. But it's about yourself. And there's a great video now, think of it, from Robin van Persie, who's talking with his son, where he explained this perfectly. And maybe we can put it on the show notes or whatever, but that's great. I think that shows, if many people should have that behavior, the world will be a whole different.
Okay, thanks, Paul. I will make sure that we'll be on the show notes. And with this, thanks again for your time.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. You can follow us on Twitter at @scraftspodcast. Visit our website, softwarecraftspodcast.com. Or follow our page on LinkedIn. Give us our feedback and see you next week.